come, or they cross the, whatever it is, some peak where it's described, you can't see one house from the other, and they see the second house. Roy's working in Dublin. And the second house, the name of this house, is Westcross Grange. And in it, they see two children, another boy and another girl, who are working in Dublin again. And this boy and this girl are torturing the girl. And they start making fun of the boy and girl. And another girl, whose name is Skulker, there's a character in Skulker, catches Kathy and bites her, so she's forced to remain in the Fresh Girls' Grange. And when she returns, we're just building up the diversity here, and when she returns from the Fresh Girls' Grange, where she stays, I think, for 5 weeks, suddenly she's a lady. She's not a wild thing going around the world. And suddenly there's a turn in her relationship. She looks at Heathcliff, and suddenly she sees him as something that's lower class and perhaps lower than class. And Heathcliff sees that she sees him like this. And in the crowd, he decides to become even lower than lower class. He can't believe it. He wants to stay on the middle and he doesn't want to be on the middle. And Heathcliff says something really beautiful, very precise. He says, "I wish I had light hair and a fair skin and was dressed and behaved as well and had a chance of being as rich as Slinton." That's the rich boy, as the rich boy would be.
So we have a story about class and about race. Okay, then Heathcliff, we're building up the diversity here. Slinton, the rich boy, comes to the house to visit Kathy. He looks at Heathcliff and says, "You look like a horse for your hairs in your face." Heathcliff gets angry, runs into the kitchen, grabs some hot applesauce, and throws it into Linton's face. Kathy's very upset, but Hindley actually beats Heathcliff for doing this, and Kathy realizes suddenly that she loves Heathcliff. So we have the announcement of diversity. It's the next summer, 1778. According as the narrator says, 22 years ago, the book was written, 1776. Important for us. The book is being written, the story is being happened. It's not being written, the story is being set at a time where democracy is in question, where it was a very viable hot trend. Okay. Now the perversity has come to such a point that everybody who lives in this house in Wuthering Heights is acting badly. And what we can see is we can see how unfulfilled desires work in the action. Hindley's silly wife, that's the only way she's been described, Frances dies. So Hindley, because of lack of a wife, becomes a drunk. Kathy decides that she wants both Linton, the rich boy, and Heathcliff. She wants Heathcliff because that's where the empathy is. She wants Linton because Linton represents society. And Kathy never can, like, forego society. She can never say, "No, I don't want to be incorporated in the social being in the community." So Kathy wants both Linton and Heathcliff. And Heathcliff, realizing this, feeling rejected, feels the lack, decides to become as brutal as he can, tries to turn himself into a door. As a result of this action, Kathy and Linton decide they're lovers. There's an interesting Ties essay in literature and people on Wuthering Heights. It makes it a big point where he emphasizes again and again that Kathy is acting morally. And I was always very confused by this, why Kathy would be acting morally. And finally I realized that when, according to Katai, I think it's important to say that we're working morally, we're all social beings. I think Europeans and Native Americans predicate existence on being in the community, being a social being. Being as individualism is being as individualism. And this idea that morality is dependent upon the relation between self and community is primary importance to what one makes. And this is what defines means by capitals and morality. A society's purpose is to keep society going. I'm just doing some simplistic sacrifice and advice. And insofar as the society is interested in perpetuating itself, it sees as good all that perpetuates itself, so it things like social bonds, social contract, etc. And good is defined as that which hopes perpetuate, which acts in favor of the social bond. Evil is that which acts against the social bond. Heathcliff definitely is always acting against the social bond. Kathy is in the middle position. And that's the struggle that's going on. And of course, to act against the social bond is to act in the realm of bad sense. So here, we can get caught in this war on young children. It's this desire of Kathy's to have both Heathcliff and Lincoln as her lovers that Luke is going to land on the whole of war. Because it's not a reconciled desire. And that's how this story begins. Stories are going to work itself out. So this is the setup. You know, it's like the setup of formula. This is the formula. This relationship to society. This double and uncompromisable desire. Symbolically, to have both people and humans lovers. The same time, Hareton, who is Hume's child, is playing with guns. Just going to be along with the diversity of all of us. We've now arrived at the world of total perversity. Henley, there's a little scene where Henley drops his own child. He's just so drunk he doesn't care. The child falls down some stairs and he catches the child. Okay, this little scene is prelude to the scene where Kathy tells the nurse. Again, things work together in nice new communication. People telling each other things. She tells the nurse, one, she's going to marry Lincoln. And the nurse says, that's absolutely gross. You don't have any feeling for Lincoln. Then she tells the nurse, after she says, I'm going to marry Lincoln, she says, I have this dream, very famous dream. I went to heaven, and there I realized in heaven, in the wonderful good society, I was totally displaced. I don't belong here. I ran back to Wuthering Heights to hell as fast as I could, because that's where I belong. And then she says, I am more beautiful than beautiful. The head has been shot for it. There's no more rationality. We have the death of reason. And in the house in which reason is buried, she says this, so that Heathcliff can overhear. And Heathcliff, overhearing all this, disappears. He not only had perversity, but he had in bad sense. And from now on, conversation, every conversation between Kathy and Heathcliff will be done in place and in the bad sense. Kathy, because Heathcliff has run away, gets sick, and she ends up convalescing at Brushwood Grange and ends up marrying Linton in order to ensure that the state of perpetual absence, of lack, will be between her and Heathcliff. She doesn't live down. So, suddenly you realize that as you're reading Wuthering Heights, you're not reading what's called realism, but you're reading. What you're following is a dream. You're following as a dreamer, and a dream follows as a girl. You're seeing what desire looks like. What works like a map of desire. How desire works. Through these times. Kathy is always getting what she wants. Getting a picture of life. Of life. Okay, you can see how this all works in the drawing. show you. Okay, little break in the bathroom. Just to ensure that you don't think you're reading anything realistic. Suddenly, Heathcliff returns in absence and returns in his handsome, rich, and relationship. There's absolutely no explanation of how he became rich and relationship. Okay. He has now decided, in his absence, that he's going to get revenge on Henry, the way Henry treated him. And this is the beginning of the story of Heathcliff's destruction. He's out to destroy Wuthering Heights. What he's really out to do, you'll find later on. This is just the beginning. First of all, he wants revenge on Henry. So what he does is he starts renting the tenancy at Wuthering Heights, which later Mr. Locke was rented. And he starts gambling. And he was an old drunk and, you know, not very in control of his own actions, starts losing the cards. Then he encourages Isabella. Isabella Linton, that's the name of the sister of the rich boy Linton. Right? Okay. Isabella Linton, quite perversely, gets a crush on him. Quite perversely, because she knows that what Kathy says about Heathcliff is true. Kathy says Heathcliff's a fierce, cruel, wolfish man. And Heathcliff, at the moment that he's trying to seduce Isabella, quote, stared hard at the object of discourse, as one might do at a strange, repulsive animal. And this statement is echoed, this feeling is echoed in Kathy. Because Heathcliff and Catherine are always bringing each other into existence. Their existence is predicated on each other. That's how the book works. And one will always mirror the other. One will be the other. I am not Heathcliff and Heathcliff. So Catherine says, in this mirroring relationship, I had risen in angry... It's not mirroring, it's empathetic. It's important differentiation. I would get to the second part of the story. I had risen in angry rebellion against Providence. What is it against? Okay. There's a little story in the next chapter about Heathcliff's perversity. Just so you know, what you're looking for. The nurse, Ellen, who perhaps the most perverse character in the book. Don't want to get into that. She took care of Hareton, who was a real child. So she goes to visit Hareton in this job. And Hareton, in response to her greeting, throws a rock. So she says to Hareton, who's your master? And Hareton says, Devil Daddy. And she says, and what did you learn from Devil Daddy? And Hareton says, no. Linton finally gets sick of Kathy hanging around with people. And he tells her that she has to quit. He can't come and quit. Same old story. So Kathy simply locks herself in a room. She doesn't want to get it all. She doesn't do what anyone tells her. And she decides she's gone. And she's totally gone. Right? So she announces she's gone very loudly in the place. And meanwhile, actually, she's sneaking off and meeting Heathcliff at night. Heathcliff, furthering his revenge, runs away with Isabel. And Kathy actually almost dies after this. And when she recovers, she's even tighter with Linton, her husband, than before. Meanwhile, Isabel has discovered Heathcliff's true nature, as if the only other world is otherwise, and has decided that she's going to hell. Isabel says, the concentrated essence of all the madness in the world took up its abode in my brain the day I linked my fate with theirs. So now the perversity has infected all these characters. Linton, perverse because he refuses to see Isabel. When she becomes a baby, he let that in the brush for us when she can't take Heathcliff anymore. Heathcliff, we know what he's like, because he scoffs, he learns that Kathy's been ill, Kathy, the grand love of his life, and he scoffs. Says that she's ill, so that doesn't help him. Heathcliff then, not so perverse, but Heathcliff hangs Isabel's door. Just is we have the language of emotionality. We have the, you know, in the text I often read emotional growth, it's totally emotional at this point. We have the actions of emotionality, and they're totally governed in this world. Rationality is gone, the locus, the head is in power. And the nurse, who's becoming more and more perverse in spite of her very liberal kind of language attitudes, arranges a meeting between people and happy. So Heathcliff runs into Brush Hill Strange, sees Kathy, and suddenly there are no more boundaries between the two of them. But always, as in one show, the minute there are no more boundaries in how to live ecstasy, they have to explain it all over the place and tell you what it looks like. And Heathcliff says to Kathy, you know, you were the guilty one. If you had stayed with me, none of this would happen. And Kathy says, yes, I admit, I did the wrong thing. And Heathcliff was looking at those two people, so. And Heathcliff says, all right, I forgive you. He says, I love my murderer, but can I love you? And then Linton comes home and goes to church and sees Heathcliff and Kathy together. But Heathcliff refuses to go. He doesn't want to let Heathcliff go. And Kathy dies. Just after the baby was born, just to cure the time. And that's the end of the first story. It's a picture of the like dysfunctional family.
Right.
It's the whole thing started by God. Heathcliff says, may you not rest as long as I am living. He's talking to Kathy after she's dead. Very gorgeous speech. Do not leave me in the abyss where I can't find you. And he dashes his head against the tree until it bleeds. A bit of the decapitation of the hero. And his book is the book. He will be right in his sleep. Oh. Beginning of the next one. Heathcliff. Oh, Isabel has a son named a little action, right? In very sale, sick, weak, pale, ill, petulant child. So Isabel dies. And Heathcliff decides that now he doesn't just want revenge on Hindley by taking control of Wuthering Heights. This is another definition of his revenge. What he wants is he wants to make Hareton into his own image. In the beginning, this whole story is going to be about what he wants and what he wants. We're going to have redefinition after redefinition of what he wants. He wants Hareton to become. Okay? He's good, has become the obsession of father. Right? He's become the father who makes his child into the image. Not something. Okay. Heathcliff has become Hindley's heir. So it was Hindley's such a mess. He's lost the cards so long and so heavily. And Hareton depends on it. So Heathcliff's first part of his plan has been accomplished, right? He's won Wuthering Heights. He now owns Wuthering Heights. We now go back to the fairy tale. That the prose believe in the book is like this fairy tale genre. And in a way, this second story is going to be a mirror of the first story. I'm going to have a story with this story. This story about Heathcliff's revenge will be a mirror of the story. I'll show you how it will be handled. Kathy grows up, the child who was born, the former Kathy, grows up. And she's as beautiful as the former Kathy, but she's wild, she's sweet, she has all the good qualities that Kathy didn't have, the former Kathy didn't have, and she has none of the bad qualities. Right? Pure fairy tale. Linton gets his son Linton. Isabel's son, not his son. Isabel's son Linton tends to Linton the father. But then suddenly the servant is crazy, born again servant, and he shows up. And the man said he could get his real son back. And that happens when he has to go back to what he wants. And the story starts happening when Linton's living in Wuthering Heights, Kathy's living in Thrushcross Grange, and Kathy, by chance, who loves the wars, it's in the blood, and he's roaming around the wars, encounters Linton. And for some perverse reason, she falls, she shouldn't fall, but she's fascinated by it. So she starts running out to meet him all the time. And she meets him again and again, and Heathcliff has decided that it's not enough. His plan of revenge, here's another definition of his plan of revenge, oh, Wuthering Heights, he now wants to own Thrushcross Grange, and the way he's going to get control of Thrushcross Grange is going to get Linton's mad account. So the whole, this whole part of the story is how he accomplishes that. And he accomplishes that with the help, quite closely, of course. At one point, when Kathy visits Linton, she finds two toys that are not CNH. You begin to have an idea of what's going on here, but this is a repetition of what happened before. And suddenly you realize that what Heathcliff is doing is he's trying to make Hareton into his image because he wants to recreate his own pain. He wants to recreate his own childhood as Hareton's childhood. He wants to make the whole world into his own image of the being. It's obsession. He cannot see outside the terms of his own childhood story, and he has to impose his childhood story on the world. So the structure of the book, the doubling, the repetition, is the stuff, is the structure of obsession. It's Heathcliff's obsession. And the story within the story is both formally and in terms of content a picture of obsession. And as the story continues, you realize that. And of course he wins. Linton does marry Kathy, and Heathcliff does get control of Thrushcross Grange. And you realize more and more that Heathcliff's talking not to younger Kathy, he's talking to the older Kathy. So the final definition of his plan is simply that he refuses to let go the original Kathy. He must see the young Kathy as being the older Kathy. Not fair to lose them. All right. You find that, this long, I won't go into the whole plot, but you find this long, intricate, rather horrid scheme where he kidnaps the younger Kathy, imprisons her, gets her to marry this really rather repulsive child, Linton, and at the same time, just after she gets married, and just at the moment that she's managing to reach Thrushcross Grange again, her father Linton dies. So it's all emotional heartstrings that she just finds it's all working with emotional language, the rational language, gone. And Heathcliff has some love. You can tell that he is operating through some obsession, because at one point when Kathy's in prison, while he's forcing her to marry Linton, he says to her, he, meaning your father, Linton, he cursed you, I dare say, for coming into the world. I did at least. Heathcliff can't see that anyone acts anymore. And it would just do if he cursed you as he went out of it. I join him. I don't love you. Heathcliff is important to the younger path of his life. No, there's still talking about this. He cursed her when she died, and that's all he's ever been saying now. And suddenly you see what this book about is. It's about the inability to recognize that of others. Heathcliff cannot recognize others. He can only see in terms of his own flaws. And he must make the world into his flaws again and again and again. And that's his crime. That was the crime of the original father. The original father took Heathcliff and made him, took the name of his child and made him. All right, at the end of the story, Heathcliff has won. He owns Thrushcross Grange, he owns Wuthering Heights. Kathy, the younger Kathy is totally destitute of cash and friends. She and Harrison, who she's forced to live with in Wuthering Heights, hate each other, and they're all. And that's the end of the story. Now we go back to the surrounding story, the last four chapters of the book, which are replicas of the first four chapters, but suddenly there's something that changed. First of all, Kathy and Harrison, obviously not even Kathy and Harrison, start to become friendly. Now, how do they become friendly? What happened first was that Harrison, being very upset that he had been, because he's actually very bright, but he could try to make these films possible in order to make him to accept Heathcliff, is very angry about books. His books represent all that's been taken away from him. So he burns all Kathy's books. Finally, and this is a story that the nurse is telling, everyone's always telling stories, what happened was that Kathy got Harrison, Kathy of being, with pride being built and apologized to Harrison for his behavior, and Harrison said, if you please give me a book. And over a book, it's very important, I'm going to show the importance of communication. Over a book, Kathy and Harrison became friends. And their friendship enables them to fight Heathcliff. Heathcliff, meanwhile, has decided he doesn't care. And this is the last chapter of the book, in which suddenly this whole turnaround, and Heathcliff emerges as a hero. Heathcliff doesn't care in a way that Kathy and Harrison have run out, that they've changed. They've taken the mold that Heathcliff tried to put on them, and they've broken through. They've announced who they really are. Harrison says, I'm not a dumb group. I'm an intelligent person. I love you. I can have a relationship with the other. And he and Kathy's relationship seems healthy. They recognize each other as others. Heathcliff has just gone into solitary. It's as if all, he says he wants everyone gone, because all he can see is heaven. Then we have the nurse as a dream, and he calls Mr. Lockwood's dream. And in the dream, she sees both pleasure and pain in exquisite extremes. Heathcliff says, okay, I own Fresh Cross Grange, I own all this stuff. I wish I could annihilate it in its property, in the face of the earth. All he can see is property, all he cares about is property. He becomes an ecstasy, finally is able to see property. And you realize that his existence is predicated by Kathy's death. Predicated on Kathy's death. By absence. As Kathy said, I am one who's good for Heathcliff. So finally, we have a turnaround in which you see that despite the story of Heathcliff's obsession, he understands the nature of love. And he dies, the phrase of evil, he dies dreaming of death. And Harrison, as female, doesn't try to make anyone into his image. Doesn't try to get revenge on him, but doesn't try to remove the pain. Harrison breaks through the whole chain of pain, as he says, and cries. Harrison's the one who cries the most, that he puts through. It's not grief, but could almost be seen as the ending of his first female show, as the only world. Now the basis of communication is not necessarily speech. Think about the relationship between people and doctor. It's not necessarily speech, or even the silence that is its foundation and punctuation, but the exposure to death. No longer my own exposure, but someone else's, whose living and closest presence is already the eternal and unbearable absence. An absence that the travail of deepest mourning does not diminish. And it is in life itself that absence of someone else has to be met. It is with that absence that its uncanny presence, always under the prior threat of a disappearance, that friendship is brought into play and lost at each moment. A relation without relation, or without relation other than the incommensurable, commensurable, concerning which there is no ground to ask oneself if one has to be sincere or not, truthful or not, faithful or not, given that it represents the always prior absence of links, or the infiniteness of abandonment. Such will be the friendship that discovers the unknown we ourselves are, and the meaning of our own solitude, which precisely we cannot be alone to experience. I think that's very much what Orwell Encounters is about. I just want to end by speaking about this tradition where I think I want to do all this to self language, the language of the knowledge between self and the other, the languages of speech, of self being predicated upon acceptance of radical otherness, of existence being predicated upon not constant repetition of the same, not upon equality, but upon change, of recognition of change, so that we have something that doesn't do in the cause, languages of silence, languages of ellipsis, of the hovering between meaning and